So why are you so into penis? They're like a thing with you.
So if that doesn't give it away, this is our episode on Alexander Payne. This is Alex from Los Angeles.
And this is Karen from San Francisco. Welcome to Movies That Shaped Us. We are two longtime friends who grew up on opposite ends of the globe with very different backgrounds, but were both shaped and are still being shaped by the movies we see and love. In each episode, we'll cover a filmmaker, actor, or director who shaped our love of film. And like Alex mentioned, today we are talking about the one and only Alexander Payne, your namesake, Alex.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we wanted to take this time to talk about Alexander Payne and his filmography, not only because he's a director that both of us really like, but he does have a new movie coming out, The Holdovers, that neither of us have seen yet, so you won't get discussion on that film in this episode, but it's just now released in theaters. I'm super excited to see it and can't wait to see what he's doing next.
Too.
It's been a very long time, 6 years since his last film. So this is one I've definitely been anticipating for a while, the return of Alexander Payne to our cinema screens. So it's nice to kind of pay tribute to him in this episode.
Agreed.
I'll start off on kind of talking about my history with him and then curious on yours, and then we can dive into our more detailed overview of his filmography. So for me, he was definitely a director that I immediately was obsessed with the second I finished watching Election, a film mm-hmm. we actually covered in episode 24, our episode on school experiences. Mm-hmm. I saw this when I was in high school and immediately was like, this is incredible. I love this movie, and went back actually to find his first film after seeing and loving Election, and tracking that down was a little more difficult. It's a lesser known film called Citizen Ruth. But did find it in the video store, watched that, also thought it was fantastic, and then was immediately hooked on every single film he makes. I immediately will go out and see in theaters when it comes out. I think it was actually too, after Election, just my obsession with that, which is still one of my favorite movies and I watch it all the time, was really Sideways, another film that just blew me away when I saw it, and a movie that the more I see it and the more time passes is also, I think, just a classic film of this century so far. So I think having two of those movies, for me at least, that is my, you know, top 50 movies of all time, really cements Alexander Payne for me as just an incredible artist with a very unique voice, you know, coming from where he comes from in the Midwest. And he tries to kind of capture that part of America, flyover state sort of culture that is something that isn't really covered a lot in films, or at least when it is, it's usually an outsider sort of coming in and trying to capture that slice of America. And I think he just does a fantastic job capturing that, but also, you know, what it is to be an American and a lot of the struggles and tribulations just surviving in 20th century and 21st century America. I think he just does a really good job on that. Yeah. So what about you? When was your first exposure to Alexander Payne, and what are your thoughts on him overall?
Yeah. Election as well. I took a filmmaking class, and as part of that, they made us watch Election.
Nice.
I had never seen it. I never even heard of this person before. This is a little bit later in life, so I want to say like 2010 or so. So yeah, I was completely hooked by the movie, the character, how funny it was, how biting it was, real but cinematic all at the mm-hmm. same time. Very human, but also heightened in some ways to kind of highlight the humanity. So it totally grabbed me. And then obviously watched Sideways. In fact, that movie is special to me, A, just because of it being an amazing movie, but also, I don't know if you remember, Alex, but you and I, we did a trip to Santa Barbara wine country and kind of followed along most of the wineries that are covered in the movie. We both love wine. We both love Pinot. We both love the Hitching Post. So mm-hmm. it's like a big kind of part of our friendship as well. And I still remember we drove listening to Sideways soundtrack that trip. So yeah, that movie, kind of like you said, it's just special and one of the greatest movies, you know, of this century. And yeah, ever since, I've always paid attention to whatever he's come up with. And then like you were saying, yeah, there's the Midwest angle for sure. There are many other directors who make human stories and life stories, but there are very few like Alexander Payne who can kind of get at the truth of it all, have really interesting, fully defined characters.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's kind of cheesy and corny to say that the place is like a third character or a second character, but it's really true in his case. Like you really mm-hmm. get a sense of what these places are. And I love that he always picks like a different place. Like The Holdovers is in Massachusetts, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that he always has like a different place, and it's so grounded. And I think that's important for you to fully get transported into that world and into these people's lives. And then he does have a very strong point of view on life and humanity, I think. And it's not just, oh, here's a slice of life or here are some character relationships, make what you want to make of it. Though that's true, he, I think, has a strong point of view on what is he trying to say, which very few directors have. And then the last thing I would say is that he makes everything cinematic, mm-hmm. you know, performances, score, the character design, all the elements of the movies are also there. And that's why he's so celebrated, you know, like this, these movies could almost be characterized as small indie movies. And though they are, but they are elevated because they're so cinematic. And there are very few directors who I think operate in that frequency where these are smaller movies, but they still feel big in a way.
No, I think that's a really good point. Like his eye and his technique, even sometimes on a simpler story, doesn't feel small. And I think that is his talent as a visual filmmaker and putting the films together, working with his editors and things. I think these movies do feel special in that way and not just like tiny indie dramas, even though these are small budget movies that the plot lines could be something in an indie film for sure, but they feel bigger. And I think another thing is, as you just mentioned, the characters. I think the interesting thing about these characters too, is I think back on every one of his movies, the main characters are always incredibly flawed in some way, but you as an audience member, nor does the film necessarily judge them. They feel like real people and that everyone has bad things about them or, and good things. And these movies kind of cover the complexity of that. Each of these main characters, I mean, just thinking about, you know, Election, there isn't really an innocent person in that film necessarily. Matthew Broderick and Reese Witherspoon's characters both do terrible things. Same thing in Sideways. Neither of those guys are good guys at all. They're completely flawed. They've made horrible mistakes, but you still really care about them. You empathize with them and you still are rooting for them in some way, even though these aren't perfect people. And I think that is what the slice of reality that he brings to these characters, especially, and which is why I think he attracts such top talent on the acting side of things, because these actors know that these roles are going to be very, very meaty, not one dimensional whatsoever. And they can play kind of like that full spectrum of, okay, you're kind of pathetic and pitiful, but we sort of feel sorry for you. You have these dreams, but you've kind of screwed up a little bit. And I think that's what everyone feels about themselves at some point in their lives too, right? Like, you know, you're not perfect. You know, you've all made mistakes. You're still trying to do your best. And I think each of these characters, the main characters, at least that he builds these films around, all seem to have that. And that's what I'm at least attracted to, I think, the performances and these characters, because they feel so real because they are so three-dimensional.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And what's more relatable than, you know, we as humans trying to escape our flaws, trying to find something better and fumbling down the road, trying to do that. You know?
Right, right. And in an incredibly difficult and unforgiving world, I think there is a, I don't want to say pessimism, but there's definitely a realism that is in each of these films where it's definitely not optimistic. I mean, even though sometimes the characters might be, the worlds are, you know, are very real in that sense. Yeah. It's unforgiving. You know, there's no kind of justice because there isn't justice in our world. And then not that there necessarily has to be or should be. It just sort of reality is what it is. And I think he does a great job of capturing that, these sort of who cares about what happens. There is, it's an uncaring and unforgiving world. And that doesn't have to mean it's a negative or dark film, but it just, that is the matter of fact. And I think his characters operate in that universe and sort of have to come to terms with that throughout the course of the film. And I think that also is sort of like your life. You have to come to terms with that as you live it in your life. And I think he's such a unique talent in capturing that.
I totally agree. I know we talked about the place and the detail of the place. I guess the other thing that he does so well also is the detail of the world in which the movie is set. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everything I know about wine and everything, what kind of really got me into wine, it's because of Sideways. Mm-hmm. You know, you pick every movie, Election, what goes on in these schools and high schools when it comes to these, you know, elections that are happening. It's so detailed, that world. Mm-hmm. But it's not done in a preachy or monologue-y kind of way. But yeah, he's not about telling or where the actors suddenly stop them in the middle of the movie and start regurgitating what is going on with them. The mm-hmm. detail is all there in how they interact, how the world is built, and you learn a lot. And to everything that we've been saying, why you connect with these people and their situations is because you're fully immersed in that world. You start to care about wine and you start to care about this local election, or you start to care about, oh, what's going to happen to this family when they lose their land or their mm-hmm. wife dies, or are they going to make it to that place or no? It sounds very small again, but it's so important for us as audiences to get transported. And it happens because the world is so fully realized.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I think you capture a lot of the uniqueness of what he brings to the screens. So why don't we jump into his filmography then? So if listeners haven't yet heard any of these episodes, when we typically cover an actor or a director, we like to look at their careers in phases. We kind of go through each phase and talk about what we think exemplifies that phase and the films that are inside of it. So the first phase for Alexander Payne, I think, really is his first two films. So that's Citizen Ruth from 96 and Election from 99. Those two movies feel to me like a more political than his other films. They do feel a little bit more raw. Like, you could tell it's kind of a new filmmaker kind of breaking his way onto the scene. And I think as well, Election is interesting because I think it's his most visually interesting movie. He uses a lot of split screen, montages, different editing techniques, pausing the screen, you know, narration, all these things that, and he kind of drops that sort of later on. But I think really the key component in these two films are they're very much satires and making political points. I mean, Citizen Ruth is a film about abortion. So it's covering all angles of, you know, pro-life, pro-choice, how the women are sort of lost and forgotten on both sides of the equation. It's not really about people or the pregnancy. It's about people trying to use that woman to make a broader political point. It's very much a satire of that whole abortion movement in the United States. And then Election is very much a satire just on elections and politics in general. Using the high school classroom and high school elections as sort of a microcosm on how our American society and democracy works, for better or for worse, mainly for worse in the modern day. So I think the politics bent is something that is kind of disappears later on in his film. So I think these two films definitely exemplify that. What do you have to say about this first phase? Have you seen both of these films? I know we've seen Election. We covered it in episode 24, but any thoughts on additional thoughts on that, or Citizen Ruth, or this first beginning phase for him?
Yeah, I haven't seen Citizen Ruth, but I know of it. But to me, again, it's just so bold, right? This is a young director coming on the scene and tackles such like meaty topics that are hard. Most people would be getting to these topics like later in their careers because they mustered the courage to get there. But it says a lot about him that he just starts with this. Mm-hmm. And then these movies are deeply funny. At least Election is. I haven't seen Citizen Ruth, but they're
Disney with is hilarious too. Yeah.
Yeah. Very they're deeply funny. They're satires, like you mentioned, but they're very clever. And it's not like, you know, I know you like Don't Look Up, but it's not sort of like using humor as like a device to make you eat your vegetables, you know? It's very interwoven in the narrative of the movie, in the flourishes, the camera techniques, and just the characters, who they are, you know? Because like we've been saying, these people are always real. Mm-hmm. And no matter who you are as a real person, there is comedy to your life inherently, especially people who deeply care and obsess about something. That is comedic in a way. So he really kind of taps into that, which is amazing. And then I guess the other thing I would say is that great female performances. Very few directors right off the jump, especially male directors or directors in general, start with, you know, showcase roles for their actresses. And in this case, both Reese Witherspoon and Laura Dern have amazing roles. The movies are kind of centered around them. Mm-hmm. Also, young actors and older actors, he's kind of playing with like a pretty... You know, Matthew Broderick is definitely older. I wouldn't call him at that point, like, in, you know, a senior actor by any means.
Right.
But still kind of, you know, older. So he's playing with a lot of different kinds of actors, building that mise-en-scene interaction. So yeah, it's just amazing to see how all that is so great right at the get-go.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a lot of things we just talked about too, around films built around performances, very interesting characters. Again, immediately right out of the gate with both these films, and incredibly flawed characters. Like, I think if I recall, the opening of Citizen Ruth has the main character, Laura Dern, like huffing paint as a drug addict, even though she's pregnant. And it's sort of like, oh my gosh. But then you sort of sympathize with her, but then you try to judge her at the same time. And it is the movie rests on her shoulders. In the same way with Election, it really rests on the shoulders of Matthew Broderick and Reese Witherspoon, especially. So right out of the gate, he's creating these films with very flawed, interesting characters that are the meat of what this film is. So I think it's just interesting to see his style sort of come in right at the gate that he continues with his entire career. So then moving to the second phase, I think after Election, he gained a lot of notoriety. Even though the film wasn't very successful box office wise, it was a huge hit with critics. And definitely that was, again, the movie that I just became obsessed with for him. So then we move into the second phase, which I really do think is his next couple films of About Schmidt, Sideways, Descendants, and Nebraska. This ranges from 2002 to 2013. And these movies seem to move away from that political angle and the satire that he played with, but still retain these very meaty, interesting character studies essentially around these people. But these movies, I think, too, even though they are very funny and there's incredible lines, especially in Sideways that I still quote all the time, they seem to be more dramedies, I feel like, than the first two films. So he's bringing a lot more drama, melancholy into these pictures and these stories that are being told in each one of them. So I think there is kind of a distinct moving away from that political bent satire in this phase too, the critics seem to come, the box office seem to come with this and a lot more respect than he got in his first two films and notoriety. So I think it worked for him. And I think all these films actually are really great. For me, the standout is definitely Sideways. And actually Nebraska really still is very affecting on me. I think that the simpleness of that movie and the tale of just the father redemption through the son is just always something that I gravitate towards. So for me, those are like the two standouts, even though I also love About Schmidt and Descendants too. But yeah, what are your thoughts on the second phase of his career?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's like a maturity in the sense that, you know, he's dealing with loss and more complex emotions. Like if Election, again, I haven't seen Citizen Ruth, but if Election is like a slap in the face because it's so biting, I think these movies are a lot more complicated in terms of its characters, because these are people who you do detest at times, but they're also lovable. They're also kind of sad. They're kind of pathetic in a way. They keep making the same mistakes. Like I always remember when Paul Giamatti in Sideways stops by to visit his mom, who's so sweet and is preparing all this dinner for her, and he ends up just stealing money from her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Miles, what are you doing? Don't do this. So there's so many of such moments in these movies and these people's lives of just people making poor choices, but from a place of not malice or evil, just desperation, you know? I think there's a lot of that in all these movies, because these are people who just almost made it, but they didn't quite cross to that next level, you know? Like, Miles has a lot going for him, but he just never gets there. I agree, Nebraska's the other standout here. I do love The Descendants quite a bit. It's really fun. Maybe that's the wrong word, to see Clooney in that kind of a role. I think he's tried a lot, and the Coen brothers and him, they've played a lot with his, you know, leading man persona and looks and such. And those movies are, some are successful. We cover O Brother, Where Art Thou, which is successful. There are many others that Clooney's directed himself that have not worked.
Exactly, yeah.
I think this is probably the most successful version of kind of stripping down a movie star like Clooney and presenting him in this kind of, you know, he's still smart in the movie, but like the movie is ahead of him. Like he doesn't even know what's going on with his wife. He doesn't know what to do with these kids, but he's very loving and adorable. I always remember his Hawaiian shirts and running in flip-flops and just being flabbergasted with what is happening. You know, it's fun to see him. And again, that takes a lot of skill. And the fact that Payne worked with someone like Jack Nicholson, who's, you know, a legend, and also created this character where he also is very flawed. He's Jack Nicholson is not playing the Jack Nicholson persona in About Schmidt.
Right.
Which
he's
again, fun to see, because his later half of his career with As Good As It Gets in Terms of Endearment, he sort of has this persona who's kind of the bad boy, you know,
right.
You sort of root for. Or As Good As It Gets, they're all in that same mold, not About Schmidt.
Right. He plays sort of a very, very average, sadder, older man who doesn't have it all, you know, together and can't just get everything he wants on his charm. Yeah, I think it's actually one of my favorite Jack Nicholson performances, especially later in his career. I think it's just fantastic. And he does hold that entire movie together. And actually, as I think about these movies, too, They all seem to deal very directly with death and mortality, yeah, or indirectly in a way with sideways of just Miles sort of realizing, is this it? Is this all he has in his life? Did he not accomplish all the things that he wanted, which just sort of happens later in life. But all these rest of these films, Nebraska, Descendants, About Schmidt, all have, you know, death sort of hanging there. And it just does put a different bent on all these films versus Election and Citizen Ruth, were a lot more lighthearted. So this death thing seems to seep into it, loss and death. And that's like a big part of this entire second phase here, which does add some melancholy, but also that's true. I mean, everyone deals with that in their lives at some point. Yeah. And what makes us human is our reactions to that.
Yeah. And I think it shows that he's getting older too. Again, like we said before, I think a little bit ahead of his age always, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah. He's not like 80 or like Scorsese or something, but he's still dealing with these issues that are midlife / end of life. And I think that, he's always been kind of ahead to your point. So he's felt like a mature filmmaker, even from the beginning, honestly.
Yeah. And not, I mean, I was listening to an interview of his and he calls himself pretentious.
Oh.
Because people who have that kind of mindset and they know about film and they've had the success and can talk eloquently about film, it can come off as pretentious. So I think he's very self-aware in that sense. But I actually think his wisdom beyond his years is actually doesn't come off as pretentious in these movies. Like, it's not like somebody who's trying to sort of say, oh, this is what it would be like. They feel so lived in and real, like we've been saying. It's pretty amazing.
No, that's true. That's a word I would never associate with him. But I think easily for a director that deals with these subjects and has a career like he's had, I think could have been on paper labeled like that. But you see the films and they do not at all come across as pretentious at all. And maybe that's because of the kind of the subjects that he chooses are so, like we said, realistic and rounded and not insanely flawed, sort of like helps make the film seem less pretentious. A lot of times pretension, I think, can come from the main characters being like avatars for the director and sort of he or she's trying to say something through these characters and just comes across as preachy and annoying. And I don't think maybe that is what he is sort of using these characters as avatars, but sort of admitting that he has all these flaws and these things about him, which makes him not pretentious, I think. Though then moving to the third phase here, I guess this is where it could be argued a little bit of pretentious, or at least he's really sort of swinging for the fences with the film he made in 2017, Downsizing, which is his biggest budget film by far, sort of going back to those roots of satire, but being less, I think, comedic like Election and Citizen Ruth. I think he's just really trying to make some grandiose statement about humanity and the human species and the human condition through this tale of people who decide to shrink themselves to use less, have a smaller carbon footprint because the world is ending because of climate change and overpopulation, all these things that we're, you know, going through resources as a society. And Matt Damon is the star of this film. And he goes on this path of a cult, essentially, it turns out to be, of people that have shrunken themselves, downsized themselves to then downsize their lives. And I think the movie's trying to play with a lot of different, very interesting topics. And I know the movie did not connect with critics or at the box office as well. I have only seen it once, I think. I've only seen it once in theaters. I actually did not dislike the film. I liked the message a lot of what it was trying to say. Though, yeah, the execution, I think, could have been a little bit better. What were your thoughts on this film?
No, I applaud him for, you know, taking a big swing. I just think the movie is trying to do too many things. And to your point of kind of failed execution, I think I was kind of with the movie until they're in this, you know, new universe of like shrunk people. But the whole Hong Chau part of it, even though I like Hong Chau a lot and she's very good in the movie, but that's when I think I the movie kind of lost me. And from what I remember, I also only seen it the one time, so maybe I should go and check it up again. But yeah, I applaud the big swing, but not a successful execution. And, you know, maybe there is something about what we've been saying. Like, he, I think, is most successful when he's playing in that intimate register of a very well-defined place, detail and depth of character, interpersonal relationships, and the mega commentary about life and loss or whatever comes through that, you know, as a reverberation, as opposed to that big commentary being the point. And right. I think in this movie, it's almost inverted. The point is there, and there's all this paraphernalia around the point, and maybe that's just not his register, perhaps.
Yeah, I think he was aiming for more. I mean, you mentioned the film Don't Look Up earlier, which is sort of, I think, the tact that Adam McKay, the director of that film, has used with Big Short. And those films seem to be a lot more about, okay, let me make this grandiose statement and then find characters that can say the things I'm trying to say, and then write the characters from the political message point of view. And I think Payne's always been the opposite, where he starts with the characters, and maybe this one, it seemed a little bit like maybe going in the other direction, where he's creating characters to try to say the things that he's trying to say, which, again, I really agree with the message of this film, with the, you know, at the end of the movie, with these small people sort of deciding to let the rest of the world kind of burn, go extinct, and they'll wait in this underground bunker for, you know, couple generations, then they can repopulate the earth, you know, caring more about the human species and the individual humans. And then Matt Damon makes a decision that no, he's going to go off with Hong Chau and care for the people, because the people are more important than, you kind of lose the force of the trees, right? Like, the human race is so important, where it's fine if all these people suffer, because in the end, humans will still survive. Yeah, like, that's not really the right way to approach it. At least I don't think it is. And that's kind of the message of the movie, which I like. But I think, yes, if he's trying, he's kind of starting there and working his way back to the characters instead of the vice versa. I think that's a really, really good point. And then maybe that's why this movie doesn't succeed. Though, again, I have only seen it that one time. And, you know, I do, with some movie I've wanted to come back to and revisit to see if it is this like a hidden gem in his filmography, or was this a film that just is more flawed as time goes by? I definitely want to check it out again. And that again is his third phase, because it seems to be, and we have not seen The Holdovers yet, like I mentioned at the start of the episode, but it seems like he's potentially learned from that lesson, or is now going back to making more intimate stories about flawed characters, you know, set in a very specific setting, and not, you know, even downsides, it was all over the world, and he'd go to these different places,
too
and
big.
It was too big, right? It was very globetrotting. I think, from what it appears, The Holdovers, at least, is kind of bringing it back down to earth a little bit. And the movie's been getting good reviews, and I think it's connecting with audiences. We'll see sort of how it does in the awards season play too. But perhaps this is Payne sort of learn from that overstep a bit with Downsize. And instead of attempting to make a swing again, he's kind of gone back into maybe return to what was in the second phase. At least that's what it appears like. What do you think from your taking the trailers and things like that for this film?
No, that's what it looks like. I'm very excited to check it out. The other dimension here is that he's also, maybe this is his first period film, because it's set in the 70s. So I'm excited to, you know, see his usual depth and detail of place, but at this in this movie also play with time. So I think that'll
really
be interesting.
Point.
And I've heard a lot of great things about, and he himself talks about that they really wanted this movie to look like a movie from the 70s and like a Hal Ashby movie from that time. Mm. But also a movie that is made today and made it look like, and make it look like it was made in the 70s.
Mm.
Not that it was made in the 70s, you know? Mm-hmm, so there's apparently like a fake Focus Features logo in the beginning that looks like a 70s thing, even though Focus Features didn't exist in the 70s, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of fun that he's playing with a period setting. And
yeah,
I'm
no,
also happy that he's reuniting with Paul Giamatti, which
I
think might be his, probably his muse, I think. Mm. Like, he, whenever I think of Alexander Payne, maybe it's because we've, you know, both you and I, we've connected with Sideways in such a deep way.
Mm-hmm.
It could be just that, but there is something about Paul Giamatti, at least in his movies, or just Paul Giamatti in general, I guess. When I think of him, I always think of this person who's capable and smart and sharp, but there's something that's flawed, something that's just not fully there, and somebody who's trying to grasp and kind of get to that next level. I mean, I guess I'm re-describing the Sideways character, but that's what I associate Paul Giamatti as now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just so iconic, and this, I think that's the register that Payne also works in, like we said throughout this episode. So I think it's a great match. I'm very happy that they are together again. And I hope Paul Giamatti, who was snubbed for Sideways, is recognized for this movie in a year which is going to be a crowded best actor race. So I'm worried.
Oh, yeah. Yes, this is going to be a very interesting Academy, especially on the actor side. or really just all up. But I'm just interesting to see how, the Alexander Payne film fares. So this end of the episode, we usually talk about what do we want this director or actor to do next. So with Payne, what are you looking for him to do now that he's kind of gone back to, it sounds like more of his roots with Holdovers?
I think I wanted to stay in these roots of intimate stories, rich characters. It might be fun for him to sprinkle in some of that political biting edge. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be fun for him to maybe retreat even further. And with all the experiences and relationships and everything that he's gained about filmmaking, apply that and make something that feels current but is intimate. So I guess more in the election vein, you know, that could be pretty interesting. And once again, pick like maybe one of those states which are purple, you know, or completely red with some spots of blue, and sort of explore. We live in such a divided world now, and who better to kind of look at all of that through a very human lens of our differences and kind of poke fun at it, make it funny, but also make it really current, work with amazing stars, you know, older actors, but also introduce some new young talent. So yeah, that's my wish.
Interesting, because you know, we were mentioning, you know, you were even saying maybe go back to that second phase. What you're describing is eerily similar to actually Citizen Ruth. I do think you should watch that movie. Actually, it was a lot about the divisions in this country, though it was, I think, more a cynical edge to it, because you didn't really, you know, both sides of that abortion debate in that movie are come across very negative and sort of putting politics above the people, which the, you know, the main character's caught in the middle. So I think you should check that film out for sure. For me, it's interesting because I think my first sort of thought was it would be very interesting to see him do something period. Now, I think 70s might be as far back as maybe his aesthetic would go. And I wouldn't really see him doing something, you know, set in like the old West, or that just doesn't feel like, it's too far removed from where we are now. And I think he does such a good job with the current, you know, commenting on the current state of things, or just the current state of the human condition, and doing something, you know, too much like downsizing, I think would push him too far away from that and wouldn't be as successful. So I think I'm with you on just kind of going back into this second phase, grounded characters again, and working with the great actors that, you know, he seems to be attracting. So I'm actually kind of pleased that he seems to be returning to that with Holdovers. And I'm hoping he stays there for the foreseeable future. I'm not sure if him going outside of that box, for better or for worse, will work for him. I just think he works really well with this very specific type of movie. I mean, his entire filmography, other than Downsizing, I think are really, you know, successes, honestly, artistically, you know, to varying degrees. But I think that would all be considered them successes and great movies that I return to. So I think, you know, he just has a lane and he can stay in it, and there's nothing wrong with that. He doesn't need to stretch himself. I think he just continues to deliver these excellent films.
Yeah, and they are stretches, you know, because the setting and the topics he handles are all very different. They just happen to be intimate, you know?
True.
Yeah, I really want to watch Citizen Ruth. Although from what you're saying, I think I want him to maybe do a better mashup of the biting and the warm and melancholic, as opposed to just the biting, because we don't need that either right now. I think we need something that can actually get to the truth, which usually in my mind lies somewhere in the middle, and explore that through the humanity of, you know, all sides, if you will. I do have one other thing, which is we missed his little mini segment in the Paris Je T'aime films that came out. He has a great Margot Martindale short film as part of that he did, which I love. She's amazing. And it made me think, like you said up front, he's such an American director. And that whole story is basically Margot Martindale's character, who's an American woman from the Midwest, who's been saving money to go to Paris her whole life. And she goes there, and what happens? So that could be like a fun, and once again, it's sad and melancholic, and she's trying to speak in French, but doesn't really know. And she's just alone, you know, doesn't really have anybody else in her life. It's deeply sad, but also comforting. So that makes me think a feature length movie where he is in some other part of the world and exploring that world and that city and that space, you know, with his deep sense of richness of place from the point of view of an American.
Oh,
I think that would be amazing. I mean, he has Greek heritage.
Right.
go to Greece, you know, explore that. Like, that would be amazing.
Yeah, maybe he should have done My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3 instead of Neapolitanos.
Do not get me started. I did watch that.
Yeah, that'll be another episode we'll do on that that film franchise. The listeners can wait with bated breath on that one.
What a heartbreak. Is the first one is one of my
so
favorites.
Great.
Yeah. Covered in the past.
Yeah. Well, we hope folks enjoyed this walk down memory lane of Alexander Payne's filmography. And if people have seen Holdovers, hopefully it is as good as we're hoping it is. Just a reminder to make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your podcast platform of choice or on YouTube. We're available there, and you can actually look at individual reviews of all the movies we've covered, including the episode on Election. And with that, I'll say goodbye.
No, if anyone orders Merlot, I'm leaving.
You know, honestly, I kind of like Merlot. I'll admit it.
I didn't drink Merlot for years because of this movie, and I've just come back to it like maybe last year.
Nice. Welcome back.